Thanks to Sister Alita, I made a request last night if somebody would find this for me, and she found it on a website, and I downloaded it. This is George Washington being baptized of John Gaino. John Gaino was a chaplain. I got to say just a few things about John Gaino, okay, in his defense. If you go to this website, there are some things on it that are not true. Okay, one of the things that is not true, John Gaino was a stickler. He would not baptize anyone unless they had a profession of faith. I mean, they had to give good evidence. On one occasion, the Philadelphia Association appointed John Gaino to go down and investigate a church in North Carolina. It was North Carolina, South Carolina. He came back and reported half of them weren't saved. I mean, he was a stickler. You had to have a profession of faith or he did not put you in the water. Now, if you go to this website, it says, well, you know, George Washington didn't give a profession of faith and join the Baptists. Well, there's some... I disagree with that. John Gaino would have never... If you read the history about John Gaino, there's no way he would ever put anybody in the water unless they gave a good testimony of salvation. Let's pause just for a moment. Okay? Pause for a moment. Think. When we get to heaven, guess who's going to be there? Old George Washington, first president of the United States. And we'll sit around the throne of God. This is a painting that's in the John Gaino Chapel. And see, a lot of people don't like this, that a Baptist baptized George Washington. And there may be some political reasons why he didn't come right out and connect himself with a local church or, you know, have a constant affection and companionship with the local church. Didn't serve a local church well, for political reasons. I don't know. We have one running right now that's been in Missionary Baptist churches, heard the truth. But he doesn't come out and say, I'm a Missionary Baptist, does he? Huh? So, you know, that could be the reason why. I don't know. I don't know. But I do know this. John Gaino would have never baptized him unless he had a good profession of faith. Now, I want to talk just a little bit about religious liberty. I don't know how much of this I'm going to be able to get through. There are many men that championed religious liberty in this country. And, just a few seem to get all the glory that actually belongs to many. We know about the statements of such statesmen as Benjamin Franklin and George Mason and Patrick Henry and George Washington and Samuel Livingmore and Thomas Jefferson and James Madison. And, you know, when we think of American democracy, we often think of these men as being responsible. But see, all of these people that went to America also came... Anglicans, also came Puritans, also came the Episcopal churches. And, England tried to control America. And, people that lived in these communities in America, in these colonies in America, they were taxed. And they had to pay the preacher, whether they believed or went and listened to him or not, they were taxed. And they had to support financially the church. Some of them even, if you didn't support the church, didn't attend their churches, you were mobs, and I'll get to that in just a moment, you were imprisoned, and there was much persecution in America in the very beginnings of things here. And we need to keep that in mind. But let me say this. There's no way you can explain America apart from the Christian religion. There's no way you can explain the democracy and the freedom we have in this country without having reference to God and His providence. No way. One historian, Bankford, said that religious liberty is from the very first a trophy of the Baptists, and I agree with him. Let me say just a few things about Roger Williams, okay? You know, he stands out above the rest. He's at the top of the list when it comes to the democracy in America. You know, Williams was a brilliant thinker. You know, and he forms in 1636 a blueprint. Because, you know, when the Declaration of Independence was written, when the Constitution of the United States, when the Bill of Rights was given to us as American citizens, for 140 years they had been practicing that in Rhode Island. There was a perfect, pure democracy in Rhode Island before any of the other states adopted it. And so, you know, this was a Baptist principle. No one denies that freedom of conscience was a Baptist principle. Y'all all know why it's a Baptist principle, because we're the ones that believe that salvation is internal, spiritual, and personal. Salvation, your relationship with God, is a spiritual thing. It's between you and God. How many times when sinners come to this altar, I have said, this thing is between you and God. That's what Baptists believe. It's between, and you can't force religion on anybody. You can't. I couldn't force it on my kids. You know, my parents couldn't force it on me. I had to experience it for myself. And so this is a Baptist principle. No historian has ever denied that. And, you know, there's been claims made that he founded the first American Baptist, first Baptist church in America. That's not true. Okay, that is not true. Brother Reynolds mentioned this, and I'm kind of picking up where he left off with his last speech. He made reference to Roger Williams being excommunicated from Massachusetts, and him going into Rhode Island, which basically was a wilderness at the time, and he went in there to preach to the Indians. That was about the only thing that was there to preach to, and ended up buying this from them, learned their language and so forth. But when he went into Rhode Island, he and his followers organized a Baptist church. But it was never regularly connected with Baptists. You know, one of his followers baptized him. He baptized them. Well, you know, that don't work. He knew it didn't work. And within like 4 months, he deserted the group. You know, he deserted the church. The church eventually was abandoned. It wasn't to some 60 years later that somebody picked up the name, see, and said they were the church, and they built a building, you know, and people have been admiring that, and it's been an object of great interest, but it was built in 1876. You know, Roger Williams' church, it wasn't even a Baptist church. He claimed it to be a Baptist church, but, you know, it disbanded. None of us in America have descended from this Baptist church. Keep that in mind. Okay, that's wrong, children, in your history books. Roger Williams did not organize the first Baptist church in America. Okay? He didn't even have scriptural baptism. But he was a brilliant thinker. And he did organize and orchestrate a democracy in Rhode Island. You know, and he devised this charter in 1636 that anybody could come in there and worship whoever they wanted to worship. The same thing that I read to you from Tertullian. If he wanted to come in there and worship Jupiter, well, that's between him and his God. You know, if he wanted to worship an insect, it didn't matter. Jews at the time, they were shut out. And but, you know, Roger Williams welcomed them to Rhode Island. Every colony in America, save one, excluded Catholics. They didn't let Roman Catholics in. The Episcopals didn't want the Roman Catholics to come in to these colonies. They couldn't come in there and have their church. But guess what? If you're going to have freedom, you've got to have freedom for all. Amen? He said, come on. This is Rhode Island. We believe in a democracy and freedom of religion. Now, he didn't like the Quakers. You know, he despised them. I've got written here, and this is a quote from Dawson said that the Quakers irked him. You know, he despised them. But, you know, he had to lay all that stuff aside, and he loved to debate them. But as far as them living in Rhode Island and worshiping in Rhode Island, the door was wide open. They were welcome. You know, in other states, colonies, I guess I should say, the Puritan Congregational in Massachusetts Bay Colony, they were killing Quakers at the time. Quakers were martyred in America, in Massachusetts. And then Roger Williams, with his charter, his honesty, he kept that pledge, and they could come in there and worship the way they wanted to. And everybody, every citizen in Rhode Island was free to vote for whatever particular person they wanted to that ran for government. Anybody, whether you're a Jew or whether you were a Quaker, you could run for an office, a governmental office. Now, you, like Brother Reynolds said, you wouldn't get elected probably because it was primarily Baptists that had the swing vote in that colony. But the door was wide open. And, you know, he granted all other groups the freedom of choice. The Williams colony, at the time, it seemed to the rest of the population and the rest of the world as taking a risk, allowing people freedom of speech and democracy. And, you know, a lot of these other colonies, they taunted their neighboring colony, Rhode Island, and because they said that it has become a refuge for undesirables, a state of riffraff and undesirable people. But the colony lived, the colony prospered, and democracy was demonstrated to the whole world as a practicable policy. I want you to note something. Thomas Jefferson makes reference to this when he writes letters to six Baptist churches in Virginia. And he clearly states that it provides a fair experiment that freedom of religion is compatible with order in government and ordinances to the law, or in obedience to the law, rather. In other words, he says, we have 140 years of proof that this works. See, the rest of the world did not have democracy. And so he says there's a fair amount of proof that this works. In Dawson's book, he lays side by side the charter of Roger Williams for Rhode Island and the writings of the Declaration of Independence, Constitution of the United States, right in here side by side. And he shows how that Roger Williams and Jefferson drank out of the same well. See, Jefferson came along and actually just revived and embraced the principles of Roger Williams that had already been established in Rhode Island. Rhode Island was the only example in the whole world of a real democracy. Okay? Y'all get that point. So Thomas Jefferson gets his ideas for the Declaration of Independence from Roger Williams and his example. It's clear to see that they drank from the same well. But also, Thomas Jefferson was friends with the Baptists. The local Baptist church, Button Mountain Baptist Church, which was near where Jefferson lived, and the pastor there, William Wood, was his very close friend. And Jefferson had an aunt who was a Baptist, and frequently he would go with her to a worship service, and as some of the churches here do, after worship service, they had a conference meeting. Thomas Jefferson saw them in do their conference meeting, and he made the statement, the Baptists have the purest democracy in the world. See, Baptists had democracy long before Roger Williams. We believed in congregational ruled kind of government. And on that paper that I gave you, which shows the Baptist doctrine, it's in there how we believed. all these many years. But it's also just the scriptures teach that. Amen? It's a principle of scripture as well as history and our Baptist forefathers. Well, there's a popular preacher who lived. Let me say this. There's numerous correspondence between Buck Mountain Baptist Church and Thomas Jefferson. He would write them. They would write Thomas Jefferson. There was also a lot of correspondence, and I don't have time to go into all of it, but they're in these books, like Thomas Armitage, you can read in there, and many of these other, Dawson, there's numerous, here's John Leland's book, numerous correspondence that was written between the Baptists and Thomas Jefferson. Whole associations. On one occasion, John Leland, and we're getting to him right now, John Leland was called upon by an association to write George Washington a letter about religious freedom. He did that. George Washington responded to him, and that association wrote him a letter. They were in complete, absolute agreement about freedom of religion. See, these churches, these non-Baptist churches, the established church, the state church, as it was, in these colonies like Massachusetts and Virginia and other places, they ran things, okay? And our people, the Baptists, opposed that. And it was called, as one historian called it, constant clamor. See, they didn't just sit on in their pews, and they knew this was needed in America. Freedom. Freedom. And they pressed for it. And they picked up the pen, and they wrote. These men, like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and James Madison, Patrick Henry became he was a lawyer for the Baptists, getting them out of prison all the time in Virginia. Patrick Henry had great compassion for the Baptists, and when they would get locked up or their property would get confiscated or they would get fined and penalized in some way, Patrick Henry would come down there, you know, and help them, help the Baptists. I've got a document here, and I was going to read a little of that. On one occasion where a judge declared that this Baptist minister would rot. He would rot in jail. He said, "You shall lie in jail until you rot." This is a judge talking to a Baptist preacher in Virginia. He was released after Patrick Henry came down and defended him. This right here, all of these accounts, and I've got many of them here listed, are simply accounts of the persecution in America before the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, was written and received and adopted in these states, these colonies. The minister was Jeremiah Moore. He was arrested for preaching without authority from the state church of Virginia. You know, they wanted all of the preachers to register, kind of like what they want Brother Art Reese to do in Mexico. Our Baptist forefathers would not do that. Some dislike the fact that Art Reese won't register with the Mexican government. And there's a good reason. But anyway, he was put in jail with a stirring defense. And according to history, Patrick Henry was a wonderful orator. He was a lawyer of lawyers. And he stood and he cried, "Great God, gentlemen, a man in prison for preaching the gospel of the Son of God." See, he was a champion for liberty. I don't have time to get into all that, but it's a matter of history, and I hope that you'll maybe read some of these letters. But John Leland was one of the most popular preachers in Virginia, and I'm almost done, by the way. And he lived near the home of James Madison and had a contact with him and was instrumental in pushing for the Bill of Rights. You know, Jefferson was a close friend of Leland, and Leland was closer to Jefferson than he was to James Madison, though I guess he would consider James Madison somewhat of a friend. When Jefferson was elected president, Leland induced the Cheshire Township to send a cheese weighing 1,235 pounds to Jefferson in Washington. And then the president invited Congress and the Supreme Court to come help them cut the cheese. See, you can remember that now, kids. And Leland preached at the Capitol, both the Houses and the Congress. I believe a record or account of his sermon is in his writings. But they were real close friends. And keep that in mind, a Baptist preacher is the one that gave him the greatest, gave Thomas Jefferson the greatest degree of support on many occasions. I think I've mentioned this in the past. You know, there was when the Constitution was first submitted to the states for ratification, two leading Virginia statesmen were staunch friends of Baptists, and I've already mentioned them, Patrick Henry and James Madison. But see, Henry was opposed to adopting this because he said the change kind of squandered toward the monarchy. And but Madison supported, he was in fear, not squandered, squinted, I guess that's squinted, squinted toward the monarchy. But Madison, he feared that, you know, if it wasn't adopted, if we didn't immediately adopt this, then, you know, all hopes of unifying the Republic, all the colonies together would be lost. And, you know, county delegates were to be sent from Virginia and to adopt or reject the Constitution. Both Leland and Madison were candidates from Orange County, Virginia. Friends of Leland had persuaded him to run opposing the Constitution on grounds that it failed to assure religious liberty. See, we needed a Bill of Rights attached to that thing, guaranteeing without any doubt that we would have freedom of religion, that Congress would in no way construct a law that would prohibit the freedom of worship. Now, you know, while Madison was in Philadelphia on business, Leland started campaigning. And there's a monument erected to this incident, which was referred to as the meeting, the place of meeting of Leland and Madison. But anyway, you know, Leland ran himself an election campaign and was probably sure to win. And when Madison returned, you know, Leland presented, this Baptist preacher presented this case and, you know, in essence said, if you don't side with us, that we need more, we need a Bill of Rights, he said, if you don't side with us, I'll run against you, I'll beat you. I've got the majority here in Virginia. And, of course, at this meeting, and like I said, there's a monument erected. I think Brother Reynolds is going to bring us some evidence of that back with him from his trip. But anyway, Leland withdrew from the race and Madison was elected. And of course, Patrick Henry, you know, he got up and with his orator skills, he did great. He did a great job. But had it not been for the support of Madison, it probably would not have passed. And I've got this quote from Dawson. He says this, and I agree with him wholeheartedly. He says, if the researchers of the world were to ask who was, and that should be most, typo, sorry, most responsible for the American guarantee for religious liberty, their prompt reply would be James Madison. But if James Madison might answer, he would as quickly reply, John Leland and the Baptists. Powerful, huh? Did you know Baptist preachers were so involved? You know, the shame is, Jefferson, and I need to stop. And I think maybe I'll stop there. And I can finish this up next time. I think I can finish it up in 5 minutes. Give me 5 minutes. You know, one of the, you know, Jefferson standing with the Baptists, he was an Episcopal, okay? He was staying with the Baptists, but he was religiously an Episcopal. And the clergy, the Episcopal church and the clergy, they gave him a hard time. They never forgave him, Thomas Jefferson, for standing with us and pushing for religious freedom and religious liberty in this country. When he served as the ambassador in France, the Roman Catholics, a hierarchy, they gave him a very hard time. There was much ill behavior toward Thomas Jefferson because of his solid stance for religious freedom. Well, when, in 1943, when the Jefferson Memorial in Washington was dedicated, you know, it's ironic, one of the most ironic things in history. You know who did the invocation and the benediction for this memorial for Thomas Jefferson? Was it a Baptist? No, it wasn't. It was a Protestant Episcopalian and a Roman Catholic. Isn't that ironic? Anyway, there's many letters that have been written, and I've got a couple of them up here, and we may look at them later if we have time, but I encourage you. He clearly says that this idea where a legislator should make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof is a Baptist idea. Putting a wall between the separation between church and state, it was a Baptist idea. And he wrote Baptist churches like the Danbury Baptist Association. He wrote the New Hope Baptist Church in 1807. And all these letters are available. You can read about them. I have one more, then we're done. There's correspondence that you can read about this that was written to many associations, 6 Baptist associations in Virginia alone. He said this, he said in one of these letters, in reviewing the history of times through which we have passed, no portion of it giveth greater satisfaction on reflection than that which presents the efforts of the friends of religious freedom and the success with which they were crowned. Who's crowned? With this trophy of religious freedom, Thomas Jefferson said, Baptists are crowned with it. Wow. Now you tell me something. Why isn't this in our textbooks, in our schools? I appreciate your attention.